Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
And welcome into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Elijah Campbell behind the glass. Joe, the first 2 hours have flown by, my friend. We've had so much fun. It's good to be back in the pilot's chair with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Good to be with you. I'm so impressed with your non-caffeinated beverage and how you're rocking and rolling still.
Still going strong, man. I feel good.
You're batting 333 on classic hip-hop. I feel good
about that, too.
We got sports. We're going to have more sports than we can possibly watch. Like a week from now, we're going to be like...
It's going to be sensory overload.
Like DVR. I haven't used a DVR, and I couldn't tell you how long.
I may not even remember how to use it. I don't even know what to do.
Get my old my video cassette or my VHS tape and tape some games.
Elijah,
I got some classic games
guy?
On tapes.
Man, it's been a while. It's been since I lived with my dad who DVR'd everything. Everything was DVR'd, including every single rerun of NCIS. But
there we go.
I just get to the point now, like if I miss something on TV, especially with ESPN Plus, you can go back and watch some stuff, but there's a lot of people that just pirate it, record it, and put it on YouTube afterward.
Oh, yeah.
You can watch full games of anything on YouTube.
It's like my good friend Ryan Porth. We used to live together, and he would DVR, like, Reds games. And I'd come home, and he would be in the living room. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm watching a Reds game from 1996. They won this game 6-4 on a walk-off home run in the bottom of the sixth inning. It's like, that didn't make sense, Porth.
Nasty Boys. He must have had some, like, 1990... Nasty Boys, Rob Dibble, Randy Meyer stuff on DVR.
He's got all kinds of stuff, man. He was very concerned that if we ever left Comcast, his DVRs would just be gone. So can't have that. Yeah. Heaven forbid you go on YouTube.
YouTube would be your best friend, man. Yeah. They got so much stuff. You're in quarantine. That was the best. You could find anything on there. All full length games too.
I think I watched every game during the quarantine from like the 2013 Heat playoff run. I think I watched all of them.
Yeah, I was making my kids watch 1988-89 Detroit Pistons NBA Finals.
Oh, yeah.
Some of them were a little grainy. You know, some, you go back that far, and it's not always great. But
we didn't even get to talk about The Last Dance. Your thoughts on The Last Dance.
Oh, I've got thoughts.
That's your boy.
Oh, I've got thoughts.
What'd you think?
I thought it was really good. This whole, like, oh, best doc ever. No. I mean, first of all.
Joe hates Michael Jordan so much.
No, I don't hate Michael Jordan. He's fine. He's a great player, probably the best player ever. Listen, it's a little bit self-serving. I mean, it's weird to me, but, like, we can't get, like, 10 minutes with his family. Like, this is supposed – I mean, compare that doc to, like, the O.J. doc, Made in America. It's not even – not even close. It was really good. The stuff from that last season was, to me, the best stuff. If you were there at the time, there wasn't a lot of new stuff, but that stuff was amazing. I mean, Jordan looking at the iPad laughing at Gary Payton, that stuff was great. I appreciated Jordan just saying, I hate Isaiah. I loved it. I was really disappointed in Isaiah, my childhood hero, coming on there like, hey, you know what? Tell people you hate him too. Just be honest,
Come on, man.
You know, I mean, they iced him out. I mean, Isaiah iced him out of an All-Star game. And I was so glad when the Pistons didn't shake their hands. I was like, oh, good. And smack him on the way out, too, you know, as a fan. The Celtics did the same thing to the Pistons 2 years earlier. But, oh, no one cares about that. Oh, Larry Bird would never do such a thing, you know.
He's a little salty,
Elijah.
You're
going to get me going. Listen, I enjoyed it. I looked forward to it. I watched it all. But some of the Jordan sycophant stuff that comes out of this is just, oh, please.
I loved it. As a guy who grew up, I mean, I was born in 92, but I don't really remember watching Jordan play. It kind of, now, like you said, it was very self-serving. So I think he had, like, final say on what all went into it. So there wasn't going to be a whole lot in there that he didn't like. But it did kind of, I guess, illustrate how dominant he was. I've always heard about it, always believed it. But watching it, he's just kind of a different cat than most people. Like, the mentality of just win at all costs, nothing else matters. A lot of athletes nowadays don't have that.
Sure. Now, I think you it's not the only way to win and be great. Like, you don't have to be how he was with teammates to be great.
Sure.
But, hey, it worked for him. And, hey, you know what? Being 1-3 in playoff series against the Pistons worked for him, too. That motivated him. I mean, good for him. He took that beating repeatedly, and he got better from it.
You know, one of the biggest things I took away from that is he was talking about how big he had to beef up to play against the Pistons.
There's no doubt.
And he said, I got up to 215. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, all these people who say, oh, today's NBA, they couldn't handle the physicality of it back in the day. LeBron, he wouldn't be able to handle it. Jordan was talking about muscling up to get up to 215. Nah. LeBron is probably 270. You think he couldn't handle playing against the Pistons? Give me a break.
No, totally. Look, man, like, I love those Pistons. Like, Rick Mahorn, one of my all-time favorite. Love Rick Mahorn. Rick Mahorn wouldn't be in the G League today. It's so much better now. There's so much more skill, and they're all rocked up. And it's totally – yeah, go back and watch, like, 80s games when it was supposedly so tough. My kid and I were watching, like, a college game for that. He's like, everybody's so skinny. Like, yeah, they didn't even lift weights then. You know,
exactly.
Like, everybody dribbles with their right hand. They don't ever dribble with their left hand. Yeah, you're right. Like, we realize that football teams from now would go destroy anybody from back then, right? That's obvious. For some, and like any other sport, you get bigger,
hockey,
stronger, faster. Right. Oh, totally. But somehow, even though, like, late 80s NBA is my favorite thing ever, it will always be my favorite sports thing. I understand. Golden State Warriors would beat the Bulls by 30. I don't give a crap what you say to me.
I'm with you.
People are going to scream at me on that one because it's like, oh, the Bulls. No, I swear, there are people who played back then who would not sniff the NBA now. Jordan would be great now. Of course he would.
He would.
There's like, Charles Barkley would still be great now. Like, fine. But it has evolved. Please understand that. There, NBA fans don't want to believe that.
You got to hit a jump shot outside 15 feet now if you want to stay in the league.
Well, like,
see Bill Cartwright shoot a jumper? It's the ugliest thing on the planet.
It's bad, man.
Here's a
it's
guy,
atrocious.
A guy who was great then, who was incredible then. James Worthy.
Yeah.
Power forward, but he was a revolutionary power forward in the early 80s, mid 80s. Man, James Worthy right now, there's a lot of like 6'8 athletic guys, but most of them can shoot from the outside.
If they want to play, they will have to shoot.
I mean, it's like, it's just a totally different game. I mean, Isaiah, again, I love Isaiah. That dude shot like 28% in his career from three. He hit big ones. But now, I would love to see Golden State tear up some of those teams. I mean, it's a different level of the game.
It is. And that's the part that gets me. Is there, we've always – football's better now. Hockey's better now. I mean, baseball, it is what it is. They're not on steroids at the moment, hopefully. So that part.
So 20 years ago,
so 20 years ago, it was great. Maybe it's a little bit better. Basketball, it's fine now. I promise. Promise they'd be fine back in the 80s. Promise they would.
No, no question. Yeah, it's crazy talking to people who, yeah, the whole like, oh, they beat them up. Go watch those games. It's not like Jordan was getting, yeah, Jordan got beat up by the rim and the Pistons certainly. They would make him pay for coming in there. They weren't grabbing him on the perimeter and clutching him. I mean, he had freedom of movement to go wherever he wanted to on the floor, and he was putting 60 on people some nights.
I promised we'd get into the NFL. We're going to do that right now. We'll do it in the next segment as well. Training camp, technically, Joe, opens tomorrow for the Tennessee Titans. How excited are you for this training camp this time around?
Well,
they're going to be doing a whole lot of stretching for 3 weeks.
Yeah, it's not going to be your normal. Normally this week, There's a lot of excitement. There's, you know, the
it
press conferences.
It doesn't feel like training camp is happening right now.
Yeah, and you would have fans right out there real early, and most days you'd have fans out there, and obviously none of that's happening. I think media, we haven't gotten the schedule yet from the Titans. I would think we'd get something today, but we probably won't be in there for at least a couple weeks, I would think, because it's basically get in, get tested, get acclimated, and let's do some jumping jacks. Get in
Very
the weight
important.
Room, you know, keep your distance, obviously the players were very concerned about the kind of ramp up to football.
Yeah.
The last time they had a lockout shortened offseason, there were more injuries, and that makes sense to me. So it'll be a while before they're doing any football. We're not going to get preseason games. Listen, hey, if there was ever a time for the NHL and NBA to have their playoffs in August and September.
This is it, baby.
I mean, August in particular, normally we're kind of watching these, like, ooh, Let me get a glimpse of this first team offense for a series or two. Now you're getting real stuff. So I think you can handle training camp being what it is, which is just, it's just going to be less information. We're going to get to watch some practices and stuff like that. But, you know, preseason games have their value. I just think there should be fewer of them and they should be free to the public.
How do we feel about the steps the NFL has taken to ensure this season gets going on time with COVID-19, everything going on around us? And look, it's different with the NFL from this standpoint. You're talking NBA, you're talking NHL, they're in a bubble. Once you get there, unless somebody just goes out breaking the rules all the time, you should generally be okay. I mean, with the NFL, between the players, the coaches, the training staff, the front office, the equipment staff, you're talking hundreds of people per team that you've got to monitor. I think it's going to be really difficult to keep this under wraps and keep everybody safe. It just basically boils down to personal responsibility. Like, you just got to make sure if you're a player, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And it's going to be boring. It's probably going to suck at times. But you got to go to the facility and pretty much go home after that. That's what the NHL players had to do. The NBA players had to do before they went to their bubbles. Not really going to have a bubble with the NFL. There's just too many people to handle. It's going to be interesting, I think, to monitor how they handle this throughout training camp.
See, the NFL, with all its money, imagine if they had decided, you know, training camps typically, sometimes teams go to different
locations.
Places. I mean, the Texans go to West Virginia, right?
Yeah, like Dallas is in California or something for the first couple weeks, yeah.
So, but a lot of them are local and they stay in hotels. With all this money, if the NFL had decided to build living facilities on their campuses, then they could have at least bubbles for training camp. Yep. See, they should have done it. But now the Titans, they're going to go home. And like you said, all these people, and they're going to get tested. But did Nashville SC guys, did they test positive because they were being irresponsible? Or
did someone
go to the grocery store and in a place where the virus is prominent,
right,
picked it up, and there you go. I mean, it won't be hard for these camps to have COVID in them, and then you're just going to see – I mean, we're going to see it all year, I think, because without the bubble, you are asking a lot of people to do a lot of behavior that's really not the norm and not ideal for them.
Make sure you're not swapping jerseys after the game, though. It's important.
Yeah, that's
– You can spit on each other and tackle each other and breathe on each other all game, but do not swap that jersey.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, the whole – that's a really interesting thing. I mean, I guess if someone said, look, probability says the more you can be distanced, the better. But, like, if you're allowing this game to be played, right, you're
– I think we're past that point,
yeah,
don't
you think? Counting on these people to be clean. Yeah, it's – I don't know, man. I mean, even watching – you know, like baseball with the – we're sitting up – like, I mean, baseball, I guess, is a distant sport anyway.
Yeah,
but
– did you see Anthony Rizzo of the Cubs hold hand sanitizer in his back pocket and hand it out at first base the other day?
It's
the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Anthony Rizzo, the Cub, plays first base, and I guess somebody from the Brewers got on base, and he pulled hand sanitizer out of his back pocket. He's like, here, you need some? Here you go. I got some right here for you.
There you
it's
go.
Great.
Got to have some fun with it.
Got to have some fun with it. When we come back – there will be no NFL preseason games this year. Are we going to miss them? Is this going to be the year we miss NFL preseason football? We'll get into that next. Also, take your phone calls, 615-737-1025. Your phone calls and your text messages at 615-737-1025. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad, Elijah Campbell behind the glass. I know this one, fellas. Crisscross, baby. And the only reason I know this is because they used to play this in the warm-ups with the Preds games.
Like, really?
Every game, yeah.
Yeah, because this was like the
this
year
This
is
like
were
5 years ago. Yeah, I know it was the year I was born.
Do you remember what these guys were known for?
No.
You've never seen that crisscross video? They wore their clothes backwards, man.
Oh, yeah?
Pretty cool.
How about that? That was as cool like wearing your clothes backwards.
The greatest trend that never took off.
Yeah. Sounds great.
I might have tried it a little bit. A sweatshirt
or
yeah, I don't know. Back then we had, what are those, Zubas? Remember those pants? You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, team.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Man, there was some, boy.
So does that count?
It wasn't 70s fashion, but late 80s, early 90s fashion was interesting.
Does that count? Am I back up to 500?
It counts, man.
All right.
It counts.
That's cool. Good. Look, I'm going to need some sympathy points every now and then because my Rolodex doesn't go far. I'm just telling you.
You are doing just fine. Yeah, I mean, if he's going to go with a lot of jizz at deep cuts, it might get tough on you, but you've built up a little equity here.
We were talking last segment about COVID-19 and the impact it could have on the NFL and how everybody's going to have to be careful. Well, in the break, Kyle on Twitter tagged us in a tweet from Jeff Passan who said 8 more players and 2 coaches with the Miami Marlins have tested positive for COVID-19 as an outbreak has spread throughout their clubhouse and brought the total of cases in recent days to at least 14. Sources familiar with the situation tell me and Jesse Rogers of ESPN. So the Marlins outbreak, they had a game scheduled tonight against Baltimore, their home opener, and it's been canceled. So
yep.
These are the situations when you don't have these bubbles that you may run into with the NFL and certainly now with the MLB as well.
Yeah. So right away, I mean, maybe they can make it up, but this is an awfully tight 60-game schedule. Right away, you've got this baseball schedule that's going to get messed up because of this. Not to mention, a bunch of people have COVID-19, which isn't great. It's not something you should want to get. So this is the non-bubble reality. It's the NFL has to look at it. College football has to look at it. The NFL is going to press forward. They're going to play. But could the NFL have games that are just zapped from the schedule? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Teams maybe be in a situation where they will try to play, but they'll have to go deep on that waiver wire. I think that's possible. And, again, we'll get to the bottom of this probability ladder and look at college football and say, man, how the heck are they going to figure this out?
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be really difficult. And we were talking last segment about the NFL. I've said for years they need to get rid of the preseason because I hate
really?
The preseason.
Get
hate
rid
it.
Of it?
I hate it. God, I hate it so much.
I hate it too, but.
Get rid of it.
Okay.
This is just strictly viewer. I know they're not going to do this. I know that they don't want to do this totally, but I want to get rid of it. But now a global pandemic has shifted my mindset, Joe. I miss it. I would take preseason football right now.
Okay.
I really would.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if I'd take four games. By about game two, game three, I'm done with it. Game four is maybe the most useless thing in all of sports. Outside of your undrafted free agent guys who need that last game to claw their way onto the roster. I get that. That's important. You can get good stories and good players spring out from that. I understand that. But I miss it. I wish we were in training camp right now preparing for the first preseason game. I really do. Never thought I would say that.
I mean, I'm excited every year for the first preseason game for sure.
And even the Hall of Fame game.
Yeah, the Hall of Fame. I watch it every year, or at least watch some of it. So, yeah, and next year, I think we would assume, like the NBA and NHL won't be having playoffs in August.
Probably not.
So that void will be there. Basically, it's like, baseball and, MLS. I mean, you got other things going on, but there is certainly a void to be filled. So, they're going to have it. It's TV inventory. People still show up to watch it, but I'm with you on 2 or 3 games would be great. I mean, whatever number you cut it to, I guess if you cut it to 3 will become 4. 3 will be that irrelevant game. 2 will be the dress rehearsal game. If you cut it to 2, you might actually have 2 somewhat interesting games. But coaches are so afraid more and more of getting someone hurt in one of those games, and you're just not seeing a lot of the top players. You do see – I mean, look, last year we saw Khalif Raymond in the first preseason game at Philly do some really good things, and everyone was like, who's this guy?
Right.
And, wow, did he end up being important eventually to this team? So there are things of interest to watch. But, hey, this is the year that we can do without them.
Got a text in on the text line from Ben who says, so if one or both of our main 2 guys – get the virus, how will the Titans survive those 2 or 3 games missed? That's going to be an important question. That's what you got to deal with if you're the NFL and you're not in a bubble situation. What happens if, you're on a Saturday before the game and Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry test positive for COVID-19 and you're the Titans? Like, what do you do at that point? I mean, that's the reality that these NFL teams are going to have to deal with. And their testing protocol, they're going to be testing a lot, but that's still, you're leaving yourself open to contracting the disease. You're leaving yourself open to coming across COVID-19. And look, I get it. You can't totally eliminate the risk. Even the bubble teams, like in Orlando and Edmonton and Toronto, the risk is just not totally gone up there. I understand that. But it is more wide open in the MLB and in the NFL, where guys going to the facility, going home, doing who knows what else when they're not at home. I think the risk is much greater with the NFL, and they're going to have to have some contingency plans in terms of players testing positive and not being able to play on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I mean, if the Titans, I mean, really, of those two, like if Derrick Henry, even though he's their best player, if he got COVID and had to miss some time, yeah, they might be okay with Darrington Evans, Kari Blasingame. But with Tannehill, if you're turning it over to Logan Woodside,
right.
And this is also a case, by the way, for John Robinson to think hard about bringing in a veteran QB as a backup. Now, I have to think that that's at least in consideration. I did a 53-man roster today, and I put Woodside and Cole McDonald as the 2-3. But, hey, Blake Bortles is out there. I mean, and what you're also going to see, Robbie, is like situations like that, and then it's like go to the waiver wire. Find Drew Stanton out there, somebody to come in and help you out. It's gonna be wild. And how much, you know, emphasis, effort is gonna be put into keeping guys in their own bubbles.
Yeah.
I don't know. You're gonna do a spy on them?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Put microchips,
ankle
in them?
Monitors on
yeah,
them or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Like they're violating parole. Got a text in from William who says, and this is an interesting NFL preseason idea that William has tossed out here. 2-game NFL preseason, all versus regional rivals / regionally located, and all at neutral sites. For an example, Neyland Stadium. All tickets $20 general admission for NFL preseason.
And he's talking like after the, like in general.
In general, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Not right now, but in general.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's
just kind of
bad.
Different. Now, the owners probably won't do that because they want all the money for themselves at their own stadium, but I kind of like the, hey, if you're a region or an area, a neutral site that doesn't get to see NFL games all the time, maybe go play a game or two there in the preseason.
Yeah.
You see the NBA do that sometimes. NHL's done it before as well. Not a bad idea.
Yeah. I think here and there we've in the past, I know like Vanderbilt's had preseason games like long ago, right? Stuff like that. But NFL preseason game would look a little lonely at Neyland.
It would.
And that,
you need a lot of people to buy those $20. General admission tickets.
But, yeah, I like the two. I like two. I think two would be great. They would both be really important preseason games, dual purpose, you know, getting your people ready and also finding people.
How do we think the players feel about it? Do we think that they want two? Do we think they want none? I'm sure it varies from guy to guy.
Well,
but
yeah.
I think the overwhelming majority – probably none.
The established veteran guys are like, I don't need this.
Right.
And they know they're not going to play much anyway. They're going to put a baseball hat on. But if you're someone trying to make the NFL, you'd like six of them.
Right.
You know, because there's just some things. You can do all these things in practice, but there is a difference when you have a different opponent over there and they're doing something. You're preparing for the opponent. You're showing you can prepare. And a lot of times – you're showing what you can do in the kicking game with the lights on.
When we come back, we will be joined by the great Pete Weber as we break down the Predators' trip to Edmonton as the qualifying round against Arizona begins on Sunday, August the 2nd. Pete Weber will join us next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. No better music than to bring in this segment with our next guest. We welcome the great and powerful Pete Weber to the program here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pete, how's it going, my friend? Oop. I think we've lost Pete.
The music was still
he's
awesome, though.
He's there. There's Pete. Pete, are you there?
I can't miss on Brass Bonanza.
Exactly. That's why he was just too busy singing, Joe. That's what Pete loves. Brass Bonanza.
Pete has been sharing some really excellent
time
audio
hops.
Clips with me.
Oh, has he?
In this pandemic time. So I want to thank you for that right off the top, Pete.
You're more than welcome.
So we can't share them on the air here today.
No, Pete, this would be probably only on podcast.
Yes, probably so. Pete, what have you been up to during the pandemic? What's been going on in the Weber household?
Oh, boy. Well, one thing, this is the first time in 10 years I haven't had to use an extension for my income taxes, so got those done. And trying to keep up with the news, and there's just so much of it, including, you know, what came out yesterday out of the Valley of the Sun in Glendale, Arizona, and what's going on with the coyotes right now. And I don't think that's going to have an effect on the upcoming series that starts next Sunday afternoon. But it's been intriguing to follow all those things. There's so much news that comes out when there are no games, and that's what's just amazing to me.
Pete, what did you make of the Preds in their training camp? What were your takeaways that you had watching the Preds on the ice at Bridgestone Arena for the past couple weeks?
Yeah, watching them, well, number one, it did the heart good. I think we can say that for each and every person.
Amen.
Did the heart very, very well to be able to see that. And then seeing virtually everybody healthy. And then they had to make, I think, a few tough decisions for the 30-man roster before heading off yesterday for Edmonton. And we knew that after the David Ayers incident with the Carolina Hurricanes, teams would be taking as many goaltenders as they possibly could. So the two goaltenders who alternated play at Milwaukee, Connor Ingram and Troy Grosnick, are joining in with Pecorini and UC Saros as they headed up to Edmonton yesterday. I liked what I saw from the team. I liked what I saw from that team just before the pause button was hit. They had gone 9-4-1 in their last 14 games, and all the special teams concerns, last four games, 5 of 15 in the power play, and killed off all 15 power plays against.
I've only told my wife this. I'm gonna admit this to you guys. The first day back, like, I actually got a little bit emotional sitting there.
Yeah.
Like, we're sitting in an arena with other humans watching sports things
yeah.
happen. It was, yeah, that was. You're right. It was very cathartic, Pete. What about the lines and what John Hines has decided to do there? Did you anticipate that? And how do you think they look right now?
Well, in an abbreviated camp, I think if you can go with lines that have worked in the past, that is to say, the Joffe line, you come back with them. Bonino's line with Grimaldi and Smith. And then maybe the one that is going to draw the most interest is going to be Matt Duchene between Kyle Turris and Mikhail Granlund. I think we have seen those guys click before, and then we'll see what happens now as, well, first of all, with the exhibition game Thursday afternoon against the Dallas Stars. But you like to go with familiarity whenever you can. Now, if the familiarity doesn't produce, then you go back to the laboratory and start juggling things a little bit. On defense, I mean, here you have the top eight, and then they add Alexander Carrier just for a little bit of depth as well. But Yossi and Ellis, and let's all remember, Ryan Ellis was out for a significant time after the outdoor game at the Cotton Bowl in Dallas, and then came back, and I thought came back pretty well. I guess maybe the biggest question about people coming back and their health will be, and that's why I was watching number 33. Excuse me, guys. I get choked up talking with you.
It's a very emotional show sometimes. We understand, Pete.
Yeah, it does get to be emotional. But how does Victor Arvidsson bounce back? Because I don't know that he really had during the course of the regular season after getting that double or triple massage from Bortuzzo in St. Louis back in November. So I think he looked, shall we say, let's go the old Englishman approach. I think he looked rather sprightly on the ice the last few weeks.
Pete, obviously this is a situation that none of us have ever dealt with before, but I'm curious from your vantage point, as you prepare for Edmonton, you're going to be calling these games remotely. What do you think that experience is going to be like for you?
I'm glad that I have had several dry runs in that regard, not knowing I was preparing for this. But I did a Nashville SC game last year that was in Indianapolis from the Fox 17 studios. Now, one difference between that and this is that they still had natural crowd noise to send in to me from Indianapolis for that particular soccer match. So at least I'm accustomed to calling things off a monitor that way. And I had done it many, many years ago for some other reason, and I think actually that was indoor soccer as well. It's peculiar, to be certain, but I've taken great pleasure in watching the baseball telecasts on ESPN and realized, for example, that last night Chipper Jones was at his home north of Atlanta. Boog Shambi was up in Bristol, Connecticut, and broadcasters who can't even see each other. They can see the game thanks to the monitors, and that causes more than a little bit. At least Hal Gill and I will be side by side downstairs at Bridgestone Arena, and down the hall the same will be the case with Willie and with Chris Mason.
Will there be anything beyond the broadcast? Like, will you get any other kind of feed? And then also, when you are doing a game, like how much are you sort of looking at the ice versus looking at the monitor, you know, in a normal game?
Quite a bit, as a matter of fact. I usually just try to call the game in all places except Edmonton, where you're so far away from the ice surface, using the naked eye, or in my case, my extra two eyes that I put on over my nose, and call the game in that fashion. We're going to have a conference call with the league broadcast department this afternoon. What we are getting is going to be an all 12, as we'll use the football terminology, they like the all 22 camera. We're going to get an all 12 so we can see the entire ice surface.
Oh, good.
In addition to the program feed. That might be distracting until we get totally accustomed to that for a while, but I think that's going to be a big, big help.
Pete, I was talking with Joe earlier in the show, and we mentioned, you know, in the regular season, the struggles that Johansson and Duchesne had, Arvidsson at times battling through injury. It's hard for me to believe that all three of those guys are going to come back and struggle the same way they did at times in the regular season. How much of an opportunity could this pause and this reset be for those three guys specifically?
It's a marvelous one for them. And I think Victor's was all health-related. Ryan Johansson, I mean, from the very outset when it became clear there was going to be this return to play, he wants to redeem himself. And everybody has an opportunity here that is absolutely unprecedented. And obviously, how many times have we said this? And I'm probably going to say this too many times in the broadcast, but when you go to the postseason, it is a new season. Well, nothing has ever felt more like a new season than this is going to, beginning on Thursday afternoon.
All right, Coach Pete Weber, you are making the decision on goaltender. What are you doing?
Yep. I think I'm going to start Pekka. Just a hunch.
Really? Okay, you got to explain yourself now.
Well, the hunch would be, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but his career record against Arizona has been something special. As a matter of fact, when he got his first seven-year deal, that was signed the day before a game in Arizona, and he came up with a shutout that very next game. And you're saying, yeah, you know, that's a long time ago. But, no, he has played very well against Arizona, and you're going to need both goaltenders anyway. Maybe my feeling, my hunch is you do that by going with the veteran right away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the great Pete Weber has been our guest here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Pete, so great to talk to you again. I wish you the best of luck as broadcasts begin next week. And thank God we've got some sports to watch again.
Absolutely. And guys, it's great to hear you back on the air again as well.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me with you this morning.
Appreciate you, Pete. One of the best in the business, Pete Weber, ladies and gentlemen. It is going to be interesting from a guy. And look, Pete Weber, I'm convinced, could call any sport in like a phone booth if he really had to. But a guy that I know relies so much on just watching what he sees on the ice, to be able to call a game remotely in this situation and have to adjust to the monitors and everything going on downstairs at Bridgestone Arena, that part of it, I think, is going to be really interesting.
And I bet you the listener doesn't detect a thing.
It won't be as great
and professional as always. I think that's huge that they get the all 12. I was wondering about that because sometimes you are – look, I mean, sometimes the broadcast will mess something up, you know, with the camera. I mean, and all of a sudden you don't know there's something down the other end of the ice you're not seeing. So having that at all times, that's a big deal for them. And I don't think there's a local broadcast team going to these bubbles.
No, I think it's all the same broadcast. Yeah. Like, it's just a universal broadcast that every feed's getting.
So it's going to be different.
No and question about
maybe
it.
Maybe where things are going in the future more in general, but this is obviously different.
Different situation, no question about it. When we come back, we'll continue the Preds discussion. We'll get back into that conversation of Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, and Victor Arvidsson. What's it going to take for those three specifically to get back up to their optimum level? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thanks to the great Pete Weber for joining us in the last segment. Always a joy to have Pete Weber on the show. One of the best in the business. And Joe, quite honestly, Pete Weber, one of the best in the history of the business. He is fantastic at pretty much everything he does. He's great.
Yeah, it's the classic voice and knows maybe like more people and more
it's unbelievable.
Sports and just and actually like even history. Like if Pete Weber wanted to sit down and tell me like the history of the Crimean War or something, like I'm signing up for that.
Yeah.
You know? By the way.
Oh, no clue.
No?
Yeah, no idea.
One of the greatest songs in hip-hop history,
no
Houston
idea.
Rap.
No idea. Never heard of it.
Elijah?
Mind Playing Tricks on Me by the Ghetto Boys.
I think that is Marquise Munson's favorite hip-hop song of all time.
Oh,
really? I think I heard him say that before. But it's one of the greats.
That's a classic.
One of the all-time greats.
You're getting learnt.
Bushwick
today.
Bill.
I am getting learnt today.
So, hey, you
I'm
know
cool
what?
With it.
Hey. You're 400. You are Ty Cobb. You're Ted Williams. You're good.
I'm always cool with that. No question about it. Going to have Skillsy join us at 9 o'clock. The great Hal Gill, the other half of the dynamic duo between Pete Weber and Hal Gill. So looking forward to having Skillsy on at 9 o'clock as always. Joe, we were talking in the last segment to Pete about Ryan Johansson, Matt Duchene, Victor Arvidsson, I guess to a lesser degree, Philip Forsberg. It seemed like he was picking it up towards the end and had his moments throughout the year where he was every bit the dominant player that we had grown accustomed to him being. But I want to focus specifically on Johansson, Duchene, and Arvidsson. What's it going to take for those guys to get back up to the level that we had grown accustomed to them seeing? I think Arvidsson, maybe it's just as simple as injury. Maybe it's just as simple as him being healthy coming into these playoffs. He's got the speed back. You talked about watching him at training camp the last couple of weeks, it just looks like that burst of energy is back for him that maybe he was lacking and just couldn't have this year with the injury issues he was dealing with. What do you think it's going to take for those three specifically to playing not necessarily at an elite level, but at the level we've grown accustomed to seeing them play?
Yeah, Arvidsson had a moment Saturday. I think he scored on this, but it looked like he was just at a different gear than anyone else on the ice could be at.
And
right. It's been a while since you've seen that from him. So that's exciting for the Preds to have him looking like that. You know, the guy, Duchene, it's harder for me because, look, we've all watched Matt Duchene with other teams and all that, but obviously it's a short stay here, and most of his first season here has been okay,
yeah,
but not what he was signed up to do. So what is it, you know, what is that? Why is that, you know, adjusting to a new team, line mates changing, need different mindset. I mean, Shane's like one of those eternally optimistic, positive people. And he's a talented player, but I think if you're the Preds, you want to see him definitely just take it up in every way. You think about how he played in the postseason last year.
Yeah.
He was dynamite. Imagine if that guy shows up. Like, well, it's hard. Like, with him, you can look at the other guys. Like you said, Forsberg hasn't been that far. He's starting to come out. Johansson, huge mystery, big number one storyline.
Yeah.
Arvidsson certainly has not had it physically. Duchene's, I don't know. I'm really curious about how he'll look in this tournament.
I am too. And look, I tried to tell people this right after they signed Matt Duchene, and nobody really wanted to listen at the time, which I understand. It's fresh off a new signing. I get it. Matt Duchene has never really been a guy that you count on to be an elite player. I think Matt Duchene may not be the perfect complimentary piece. I think he's a very good complimentary piece. And I don't mean that as any disrespect to Matt Duchene. I think he's a very good player. I think he's a very good guy. I've enjoyed being around him. But I don't think Matt Duchene is going to single-handedly carry you to a Stanley Cup. Like a number one center you're hoping would. And maybe Ryan Johansson can't do that either. Maybe you're hoping together in tandem they can get that done. But you look at Duchene's numbers, I mean, 13 goals, 29 assists in 66 games, 42 points. It's not awful, but you certainly expect more when you sign him to an $8 million contract for the next 7 years. I mean, you want more production, especially in the goal-scoring department. That's what I'm looking for out of him once the qualifying round starts against Arizona. You're talking about a guy between Ottawa and Columbus last year that scored 30 goals. There's really no excuse for you to be at 13 right now. I understand that things haven't really gone the way you planned this year. He spent a lot of time on the wing this year under Peter Laviolette, maybe at times under John Hines as well. He didn't really want to play the wing, said he would, but he came here to basically play center. Right now they're giving him that opportunity to do that. You got to start putting some pucks in the back of the net. I can live with the 42 points. Traditionally, he's been anywhere from, 55-point guy to 60, 65, and he has a couple outlier years where he's hit the 70 mark.
Right.
Typically, he's not going to be there. But the goal scoring, to me, is where it's got to get better for Duchene once this tournament starts. You can't be on a clip where you're scoring, 13 goals in 66 games. He needs to be more dangerous at putting the puck in the back of the net once the qualifying round begins.
Yeah, but he's got 7 20-goal seasons to his name, couple 30s. So he can do that, and that's the thing. I mean, Ryan Johansson, as much as we say, shoot, he could have a great playoff and score 2 goals.
Yeah.
And they could go deep because that's what he is. He can set guys up and just be such a menace the way he plays. But Duchene does not have that physical presence. He's not the same kind of player. He's got to score. He's got to put the puck in the net. So that line – Like Pete was saying, I mean, that's a fascinating line. And if they can get it going, and again, I love how they looked together during practice, which is the classic,
eternal optimist point of view.
Well,
man,
they
look good at practice.
It's like shoot around, for a basketball player, he hit every three in shoot around, and
right.
Then he went 2 for 14 that night. So you take it with a grain of salt, but they got them working together a lot, and they seem to have a nice feel for each other right now.
Joe, you mentioned earlier in the offseason, I call it the offseason, the pause, you talked with Ryan Johansson kind of about the year that he had, the struggles that he went through, and how there's an opportunity now for a reset to get back to the Ryan Johansson that we've grown accustomed to seeing during his time with the Predators. Where do you think he is right now from a mental standpoint as they're approaching this series against Arizona?
Well, look, I think that he has the right approach in terms of I've got to look at myself and not blame other people or other factors, because I do think that he's wanted to play with this line and he knows how good they can be. This year Arvidsson, as we've talked about, has not been himself. So that right there has been a problem. But I think with Johansson, there's still – it's just sort of you just have to show it out there. I mean, I think he has the right approach, and he's tried to totally dissect his game and all that. But, John Hines was asked about him at some point in the last few weeks and was like basically seeing some good things, some encouraging things, but higher level. That's always the buzzword with him, that's the go-to on what he has to do. And I just think we're going to have to find out when this starts up. Really Johansson in the Dallas series last year didn't make the kind of impact
yeah.
you wanted him to. I mean, they're I mean, who did among their forwards?
Rocco. That's about it.
It was Rocco and, yeah, Rocco and the Rockettes, you know.
Nice.
And they still hung in that series, and Pecorine almost stole it, or stole game seven back here. But he's got a – Johansson is – that. I think you have to start the list of things you got to have with him.
You know, we talked earlier about Forsberg and the size that he has and playing that power game. To me, Johansson is like – that's the epitome of what he does. When he's on, he uses that big frame to his advantage. And it's not always, you know, getting to the front of the net and scoring goals. But a lot of times it's kind of just leaning on people, buying that extra second, second and a half that it takes for Forsberg or Arvidsson or Josi or somebody to just get open. And able, and he, you know, we all know this, his ability to deliver the puck once he's got a lane to pass it. I would argue his vision is elite. I think he's got
no
elite
doubt.
Level vision with the puck on his stick. I would like to see him use that size to his advantage more often than he does. And that's, everybody talks about, you know, aggression in the NHL, and a lot of times that word comes up with Johansson. He's not aggressive enough because he doesn't shoot the puck a lot. Shooting the puck does not automatically equate to aggressiveness. You can be aggressive without shooting the puck. To me, when Johansson is at his best, he is aggressive from the sense that he's playing downhill, he's either cutting towards the net, or he's leaning on people to buy that time for somebody else to get open. I didn't see a whole lot of that this year. That's what he's got to get back to me, using that size, buying that extra second, second and a half for his wingers to get open. Like you said, he doesn't have to score a ton of goals. It'll help if he does, but he could score two goals and the Predators could get to the Western Conference Final. I mean, that's just the type of player he is. That's what he's got to get back to, I think, for me to realize and believe that he's back to being that type of player that he's been on that line since he's been here with the Predators.
I mean, I don't have it in front of me. I don't remember how much he shot or really, you know, got in front of the net and did in that Chicago series. But I just know that when he was out there, he was pushing Jonathan Toews around, yeah, and it created opportunities for his teammates. And it was a clear dominance in that matchup. And I'll look it up, see how much he scored. He dominated. I know that.
Absolutely. No question about it. That was probably the most dominant series I've ever watched him play. So we'll see whether or not he can get close to back to that level. We'll continue the Preds discussion next with Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst. He'll join us next. This is Morning Drive, live from the Wholesale Inc. studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.